Ladies and gentlemen, every so often you bump into somebody in the X Factor. What a place to bump into somebody. And you go, I know that woman. Oh, my word, that's not Dinah May. Can't be. Not from all those years ago. Not my youth. Not when we were teenagers. It really was. And she's hit the headlines with an amazing book called Surviving Michael Winner. Hello, Dinah May.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
I still can't get over bumping into you at the X Factor.
I can't. And what was most remarkable was when I heard this voice say, Dinah, and I turned around and looked at you and I thought, oh, my God, it's as if I've only seen you yesterday.
Yep.
It was amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
It was weird. And we, of course, we did an Alan Titchmarsh show together, but you had to go straight in and out. So you were doing another one and I just sort of briefly smiled and you walked off.
That's it. That's it. Our paths keep crossing right back to New Brighton at the Chelsea Reach.
Right. Before we talk about the book, tell everybody who you are, because you're an interesting lady in your own right.
Wow, Pete, who am I? Well, I was a model. I was a beauty queen. I did win Miss Great Britain. I lived on the Wirral and still absolutely love it and hope to get back there. I did television. I worked on Brookside as Samantha Partridge and then eventually worked for Michael Winner and had small parts on his films and then I was a hairstylist, and then I was Michael's personal assistant.
How did you meet Michael?
I was in a restaurant with another TV producer, and we just sat down for dinner when he sort of hissed over to me and said, that's Michael Winner. And I said, who? He said, Michael Winner, the famous film director from Death Wish. He's very important. Well, he came down and sat on the next table and the commotion was a joke. The chairs weren't right, the cloth wasn't right, so that was Michael Winner. We're sat eating and suddenly the lady he's with, another actress, had just popped off to the loo and my friend went, Michael, I'd just like to introduce you to my lovely lady who's also an actress and if I give you her phone number, if you have any parts in the film, do call her. So a few months later, he called and said, darling, would you like to come out for dinner? I've got a part for you in a film called Wicked Lady with Faye Dunaway and Alan Bates. And I'd love to meet you. So he took me out for dinner. And then the rest sort of goes into history. He was a very funny man.
It was love or hate him, he was one of life's characters, that's for sure. Nobody can ever take that away from him, can they?
No, not at all. And it's true. You really liked him, or there were so many people that really hated him.
Now, this foodie thing, he was banned, wasn't he, from Sandy Lane many years ago because he did a bad crit.
That's right. That's right. And they didn't want him to return. I think in the end he had to eat humble pie and apologise and then was accepted back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did that quite a lot.
Was there another side of him, Diana? Because you knew him better than anybody. Was there a side, was there a really nice side of him?
Yes, there was a really lovely side. And the only way I used to get it out of him, at 6 o'clock, he would always say, open a bottle of wine, darling, and would sit and have a drink. Once he had a glass of wine and he became himself, he was charming, funny, interesting. Not at all as you'd see him walking in the restaurant, screaming, shouting. He was always interested. He'd ask about my family. I had a girlfriend that had a very serious accident. He gave everything, his chauffeur, champagne, food from the kitchen, had her over to the house. He was very, very kind and generous, and to me and my family over the years.
Were you in love with him?
No, but I have to say, when he died, I realised how much he meant in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really missed him and thought, well, I did love him. He was the character who I've been close to for 30 years. So in a way, you could say yes, but not as a partner,
yeah.
As a work colleague, as a great friend and someone that gave me great advice and fun with family.
How did you cope with all the girlfriends? Did you like them? Were you jealous of them? Did they annoy you?
I was never jealous of them. I was always very happy that Michael had a lovely girlfriend. But I don't think, except for Jenny, that they thought the same about me, because Michael always liked to confide in me. He told me everything. He'd talk about the girlfriends. If he took a new girl out for dinner, he'd often just make jokes, some fun with me, and just occasional words to the girlfriend. So I think it was quite difficult for a new girlfriend to be introduced to me.
Did you go on the dates?
Unfortunately or fortunately, yes, on many of them.
Why?
I don't know. He just said, come on, you can break the conversation up. You can't sit here. Of course, I lived at the house for 5 years. And if he was taking a girl out for dinner, he'd say, darling, you can't sit in the room. You can come and join us. And I would say, no, 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 you're better on your own. Don't be so ridiculous. You're coming with us. So it was a natural progression. And I think with all the girlfriends, yes, I used to tag along as the gooseberry.
Wow. Did he ever make a move on you?
Pete, you're asking some really serious questions here. Yes, he did when I first met him. I think he thought I would end up as one of his girlfriends, and that was a running joke right up to the day he got married and I ended up getting divorced.
Right.
Sorry, I said the tables have turned. But, yes, he always said, you know, why wouldn't I live in the house? Why wouldn't I be his wife? I could have everything I possibly wanted. Mm. My children would be happy, my family would be looked after. And I used to say, well, you don't like people in your house. I have lots of friends and I'd like them to come round and have to, you can do that, you can do that. But it wasn't quite like that when you were in his house.
What was the house like? Was it controlled by him?
Yes. Everything. Everything. He was very particular and everything. All the staff were controlled. The furniture was never changed or moved unless he redecorated a room. Yes, he controlled it, and he hated things out of place, and if you put a glass on his sideboard, he'd start screaming, oh my God, get that off, it'll mark the furniture.
Was it lived in, or was it just a showpiece, the house?
I always felt it was more of a showpiece, but in his actual living room, when it was cold, he had the most magnificent fire and it'd just be full of logs and he'd have the music and that gave a completely different atmosphere and that felt home. And then he had a beautiful TV lounge that was all sort of very, very cosy and that was also a lived-in room. So yes, he did in a way, but more a showpiece, I always felt.
Did the staff live in the house?
The housekeeper lived in the house. She had two rooms just above on the second floor where his office was. Above there were maids' quarters and the housekeeper was the only one that lived in. Mm-hmm. And of course me for the 5 years till I ended up moving down to Farley Court.
I'm talking to Diana May. The book is called Surviving Michael Winner and it's been mixed reception. Are you pleased with the book?
I'm pleased with it. I'm very pleased now, and I've had some good comments from people, and I feel Michael, when I was writing it, I often felt he was around.
Dinah! Where are you, Dinah? For heaven's sake, where have you gone, Dinah?
Dinah! He made me a teddy bear. I knew that would make you laugh, Pete.
What made you write the book?
Michael kept asking me to write it, and I kept saying, you're so horrible sometimes. You know, and what you've done and the things that have happened, I'd love to write a book, thinking it would shut him up. It did for a couple of hours. And then suddenly he'd say, what a brilliant idea. Mm. Yes, darling, of course you can write a book. I said, I can't write a bloody book. Yes, of course you can. You just put the stories down. And I thought, he put me in so many different situations. And he'd go, of course you can do their hair. Just bring a comb. I think that's in the book as well. And suddenly I'm doing, you know, Felicity Kendall's hair and Lauren Bacall's. I mean, it was just, whatever he get, he said, I could do it. I could do it. And so to write the book, I just thought, I'm sat in the flat waiting to find out what is going to happen with his will. If I don't write it now, I never will. And I've done it. So I'm very happy now.
How long did it take from beginning to end?
18 months. Yeah. I've not left the flat except for 2 days until about a month ago. It was hard work. I'd never do it again.
What was he like to live with?
Him?
Yeah.
When I was at the house?
Yeah.
Very strict. Very strict. When I first arrived, after about 2 or 3 weeks, I had a room at the top of the house, which was going up one flight of stairs and then going up another. And one day, one of the other receptionists said, I'd love something to read. I said, I've got magazines in my bedroom. I ran up the stairs. I was running back down with the magazines and I heard this voice screaming, what are you doing? You're not meant to go up there. I mean, it was hard. I was very glad when I actually left the house because he was so strict. It was very hard living there. And I also had a curfew. If I wasn't in at 10:30, I would have been fired, which amused a lot of my friends.
Mm. What made you stay so long?
The job was very interesting. Some days it was a nightmare, some weeks it'd be a nightmare, but it was always challenging, it was always different, and I suppose I got on really well with Michael, and I wanted to look after my family. And it was a regular income, and it was never boring. I mean, one day it was helicopter trips, private planes, on the next it would be raking the leaves in the garden. Yeah. It was quite a mixture, but I enjoyed it.
Diana, did he have close friends that actually put up with him?
Yes, he did. I would have said Michael Caine was a close friend, and Terry O'Neill, Roger Moore, they all, Joan Collins, they all seemed to have a great sort of laugh together and ring up and say, how are you, and look after them and go for dinner. But he didn't really have what he'd call an ordinary friend, except the girlfriends. And he said they were his family.
How many were there?
He always said that he'd gone out with about 140 girls. Yeah. And there were times when one would be here today, gone tomorrow, another one gone in. He loved a pretty face. Uh-huh. And he loved the challenge of chatting to them, taking them for dinner. He also found quite interesting their conversation from where they'd come from, what they were doing, why they took this job. But his girlfriends, I think, were more his family. And he'd been so, I think, Roger Moore and Michael Caine, they'd been friends. And another very nice person, Leslie Brittus. I mean, yes, he did have a few. Mm-hmm. But others either hated him or really loved him. So,
when you were putting the book together, was there anything you left out that you've decided not to talk about?
Yes, I have to say there were. If I was in a different sort of place, I'd have added more. There could easily have been a second book. But I wrote the stories I felt at that time were interesting, and that made up the book then. But yes, I mean, how could I do 30 years with Michael? So many things happen, and so in his life with me, I couldn't go through them all.
Do you miss the lifestyle?
I don't know whether I miss the lifestyle, because I think I'm a country girl. I can't wait to get back on the Wirral, go to West Kirby, walk along the beach, have my dogs again. So I don't think I miss that. I miss him, if anything. And being in his flat, I still feel I'm sort of surrounded by Michael Winner. And his house is only up the road that Robbie Williams has just bought. But no, I don't think I do. I think I'd love now just to be in the country and get back to cooking, and I went to some amazing places, so now I'm very happy with what I've done.
Diana, is there one memory that you'll never forget? And there must be so many, but is there one that you went, wow, that's the one?
Yes, when we went to Paris, there was a magnificent restaurant called Tour L'Argent, and it was just breathtaking. He took me the tour of Paris, showed me all the different sites. And he said, when I take you to this restaurant, this is one of my favourite restaurants, and the view is amazing. Well, everything was spectacular, incredible. I'd like my children to go there, put it that way, or anybody else that would feel romantic. And the other funniest occasion, which I'll never, never, ever forget, was when we were at St. James's Palace, which is in the book. And Mike, I said, oh, come on, we've got to peek. This is where the Queen's going to come in. And when the door shut behind him, it was hysterical. And we always tittered about it all the years later. Mm. He would always go red, and it was just hysterical. Quick, get nine, get in nine. Oh, my goodness. But no, it was. There are many peaks.
Diana, when you went out for dinner with him and you went to a restaurant that you liked and the food was nice and he kicked off, what was it like? Because I would be very irritated by that.
I was. I'd put my head down. Sometimes I'd get up and walk off. I'd kick him under the table. He'd look at me and say, no, darling, and he'd just go even more wild. It was embarrassing. And I felt sometimes it was unnecessary. And I would tell him clearly afterwards. One lovely restaurant in the early days, he used to eat just at the bottom of the road. Mm-hmm. And the owner was a lovely Italian man. And we were sat in a booth. And the owner suddenly came over to take our dishes. And I'd obviously dropped a breadcrumb on my top. And this poor man went to flick it off. Well, I think that was the most scariest moment I've ever seen Michael. He stood up. The whole restaurant saw it, and he screamed and screamed, and he never went back. And I thought that was so sad, really sad. He was, once he'd made his mind up, you would not get him to change his mind, no matter what it was, or. But it was embarrassing.
Now, you mentioned the flat, and you mentioned Michael's flat. Is it Michael's flat, or is it yours?
It's still with my lawyers at the moment. Michael bought it, and in his will, he left it to me. And since then, there's been a lot of trouble, and I'm fighting it with lawyers because there was a mortgage on it. And a lot of people thought he didn't have any money. Well, it was they've only ever said about the English probate. And Michael actually had many, many millions in an offshore account in Guernsey, which would have covered all of the bills, but at this minute I can't actually talk about it, but I would like to I'm hoping it will finish and I will end up with the flat. But that's my fingers and toes crossed.
Now, who got the money, do we know, or was that all hushed up?
No, in his will he left it to the Police Federation of England.
Oh, right.
And he'd put Geraldine is his wife, three main beneficiaries, and some of the staff. Anyway, he said, with my residue, if any, to go to the Police Federation of England, since then it's been changed by deed of variation, and the money has actually gone to the Police Memorial Trust. And it's not if any, they've got millions. And unfortunately, it's them who decide what happens to the money. And the chairwoman, well, it's Mrs. Winner, and she is deciding what happens to me.
Right.
Very difficult.
Did you not get on with that?
I did. And I'm very surprised that a week after he died to the day, she said, well, of course you won't be needed anymore, will you? And I think I was very hurt and upset. And I've only been once back into the house, and I helped her the whole time that she was with Michael. So to me, I just don't know why she's gone off on this whim of just cutting me completely out.
Have you actually tackled her yourself?
Very strange question, Pete. I wanted to about a week ago, and I should have just called her and spoken to her, but I have been advised against it. Right. So I think hopefully I should be settled in a few weeks, and then I would like to tell my full story. That would be an interesting one for your programme, Pete.
Mm. Now tell me, when he passed away, did he pass away peacefully or did he have a sad, painful death?
I would say he had a very sad, long, prolonged death. Mm. He was quite, quite poorly, but his courage and determination to be there and not complain was incredible. The strength he had right up to the last. I was there with him on the Friday and we were chatting away and I was telling him stories. And then when I called again on the Saturday and spoke to Geraldine, she said, he's going a bit weak. Sunday I called again, he'd gone in a coma. And on Monday, as it says in the book, it was extremely sad. I was just chatting to him and saying, you really wouldn't want to wake up. I know you can hear me. You've said goodbye to everybody. And then it was very sad. Then he took the breaths and he'd gone. He went very peacefully, but he had suffered.
What was the funeral like?
It was quite strange because it had to be arranged the next day and it was on the Wednesday. So it was a Jewish funeral. Yeah. And it was very strange. It's not like a church. It was like a, I don't actually like to talk about it, but it's like a big square room and we do the Jewish prayers and the cemetery where we went, which was quite extraordinary. As we went out with the coffin, a snowstorm came, and it was something like a film set. This blizzard attacked us, and we had to walk a long way to where he was being put. And then we eventually all came back, and the snow stopped, and the sun came out, and the people there were fabulous. I mean, most of his friends did get there, and they were very, very upset and very touching. And I thought it was a lovely send-off in a way.
Dinah, were they friends of yours, or did they look on you as staff?
Very good question, B. I would say the way they hugged me and their tears came, they knew I was friends with them and with Michael, and they just hugged me and said how sad it was. And I'd say quite a lot of them were my friends, but through Michael. It wouldn't be a circle in a way that I would mix in on my own. Mm-hmm. And yet I have spoken to most of them since, and they're all asking me how am I and what's happening. But they were absolutely lovely at the funeral. Chris Rea, Bill Wyman, so many names, Don Black. Yeah. Yes, it was. And then he had a fabulous memorial in the Mall.
Yeah.
And that was really well done. Geraldine did organise that well. But unfortunately, I wasn't asked back to the house, and I felt that quite heartbreaking. Stephen Berkoff came up to me and said, oh, we'll see you back at the house, and all different people. It was quite sad for me.
Are you bitter?
No.
Not at all?
No, no. I think that shows in my book, and one of the comments said that the reviews, that it wasn't vengeful or anything. No, I'm not bitter. Not at all. I mean, it was 30 brilliant years and 30 years that of comedy drama and laughter and nightmares.
What do you think he would say if he was still alive and saw what's going on? Would he be angry?
Angry? Pete, I think, I feel him that last week or a couple of weeks ago, I was sat in the city saying, Michael, what would you do now? And he's there shouting behind me, so keep fighting. I can't believe this. Do not give up. He would turn in his grave because what he did, the three main beneficiaries, which one is me and two other girls, they were his family. So to see what has happened to us, he'd be absolutely distraught. He'd be furious. I can see it now. But, oh, sorry, Pete, I think he'd also chuckle. If you think he's been dead almost 2 years.
Yeah.
When all this has gone on.
When you look back at the time you were with him, how many times did you nearly walk? Was it every week?
Yes, probably. Michael would see my face and go, oh, darling, go downstairs and open a bottle of champagne. Just relax. Yeah, I was his sounding board. I mean, he'd scream and shout. Often I could always take it and I could, at night at 6 o'clock, scream back at him, and he'd just collapse in laughter, and that's how we sort of had a good relationship. But, oh, yes, he... And to see how he treated some of the staff was... Again, I'd have to go and tell him, why did you do that?
Yeah.
He would just scream, but it is like a two-year-old throwing his toys at the pram.
What did he think about himself when he was on that TV series?
Dining Stars.
Yeah.
What did he think about himself? He thought he was doing a really good job, but he didn't actually want to be as nasty as he was. And the producers said, you're meant to be menacing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that was a huge mistake. He would have preferred, I mean, some of the footage was hysterical. I mean, in the book, I've even put when he's looking through the letterboxes and a dog jumped, nearly took his nose off and he said, I know I'm meant to be a goddamn teen. You look through the next letterbox. I mean, he loved it. Mm. He was upset it didn't carry on.
Did you enjoy it? Did you get a lot of reaction from it yourself?
I did, but of course, it never let you talk. I don't talk. The minute you go to say anything, that's why I find it quite funny now. Now I'm the voice, and I'm thinking, well, where's Michael? I mean, he was always there, and he'd say, I'll speak now.
Yeah.
But, yes, he would have loved that to have continued, and then it was very sad how he had slated the Cooks of the North, and then Justin Forrester, and he said he should have been gentler.
Mm.
And more appreciative. But he did enjoy it. It brought him back to life in a great way. I thought it was a great opportunity.
Was he a good cook himself?
Ha! He cooked his breakfast on the TV show and he cooked his scrambled eggs and they just went blop all over the plate. No, the only thing he was good at was steak. He was very good at all sausages. Steak and sausages were about the only thing he could cook.
Did you have a job description as PA, or was it just anything?
Anything. Anything. Anything at all.
What was the most bizarre thing he asked you to do?
I can't actually say, but there was a very sad incident when I won't go into that, actually. I called it the poo explosion, but it's not a thing to go on the radio about.
Uh-huh.
That was bizarre, but... I would say, I can't even think, Pete. I'll have to pass on that one.
So many things, then.
Yeah, yeah. Go in the kitchen and cook. Lady Camilla's coming, and I'd like you to do A, B, and C.
Yeah.
Do a dance on the balcony and do a waltz because we want to film it. Go and do this TV. Go and do the leave. Run to the post office. You can go to... So many different ones.
Did he have any parties at the house?
He didn't like parties, but he did throw a lovely party for Georgina. And that was when Simon Cowell came. Simon Cowell had actually suggested when Michael was in Barbados with Georgina, Michael, why don't you throw a 30th birthday party? And he said, I don't like parties. I don't like my house disturbed. Anyway, he was convinced. And the whole living room and dining room were turned into the most magnificent setting of a restaurant. And he thoroughly enjoyed it. Once it's there, he panics.
Yeah. It was such a big house, or is such a big house. Did he live in every room, or was half of it not used?
Oh, no, he used everywhere.
Really?
That's how he kept his fitness. I think, I don't know, there were 72 steps from the attic right down to the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd say, come on, darling, we're going to look at this picture. We're going into this photo room. We're going up to the attic to the cutting room. We're going, swimming pool. Let's go in the TV room. I mean, no, he did. He had something in every room that was part of his work and part of his daily life. So, yes, he did.
Although he was such a cantankerous man, did he want to be loved?
Yes, yes. And as he said, he used to, a scorpion can turn around and bite their own tail. He could not understand why he did that. He didn't like people getting too close.
Right.
I think he was frightened that if he loved them like they loved him, he could be let down. So he always seemed to hold a wall in front of him.
Mm.
Yes, he was, but he did want to be loved.
Dinah, what do you want people to take from reading this book, this new book, Surviving Michael Winner, A 30-Year Odyssey. What do you want people to take when they've put the book down? What do you want them to say?
I want them to say that that is a really excellent account of who Michael Winner is, who I am. There's lots of humorous stories in there, which people don't seem to pick up on the funnies yet. But I would just like them to think of him as a nice man, a generous man, an excellent film director, food critic, could be awful, but was generous. So basically, I'd like them to think this man had a heart. And the account of his life, just going through, look at him in a slightly better light for the ones that didn't like him.
Mm-hmm. And all you want is what was left to you, the flat.
Yes.
That's all you want.
Yeah. I've never wanted any more. I was thrilled to bits. He said, you'll have a home for life. He left me the money because I said, how do you pay service charges and everything else? And he said, I've left you the money and I've left you a car. Well, I think they've gone, the car and the money, but I should end up with the flat.
Is it a nice flat?
It's a lovely flat. It's in Holland Park. It's a 3-bedroom flat, and it's got a fabulous sort of open living room and dining room, kitchen, 2 bathrooms and a toilet. But I won't be able to keep it. I'll have to sell it as soon as it's given to me. So I'm looking maybe to come back to the Wirral. Wow. You never know, Pete. I could be on your doorstep.
Maybe. I think what I've learned is that Michael didn't like you talking quite so much. We've talked for 32 minutes. I think he should have the last word.